Procession 1. I'm Ed Ritchie. I'm with the School of Public Health, the University of Pittsburgh. Session 1 is titled The NIH Strategic Plan to Eliminate Racial and Ethnic Health Disparities, Translating Public Policy to Research and Community Action. We're very pleased to have with us this morning Dr. Stephen Kaler, who is the Deputy Associate Director for Disease Prevention in the Office of the Director of the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Kaler received his MD from the University of Rochester and more recently an MPH from George Washington University. He is board certified in pediatrics and in clinical, biochemical, and molecular genetics. In addition to his disease prevention activities at NIH, he conducts clinical and bench research in the intramural research program and serves as attending physician in the NIH Human Genome Institute. In his spare time, he chairs an NIH subcommittee on health disparities, and he's going to speak to us this morning about the new NIH initiatives in this area. Following Dr. Kaler's comments, we will have comments from Dr. Stephen Thomas and from Dr. Buford Longest, and I will tell you a little bit about them as their turn comes. Dr. Kaler, welcome again to Pittsburgh. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed, very much. I think I may begin with a few remarks that will precede my formal presentation, just to say good morning to everyone here and to thank you all for coming. I'm really delighted to be here this week to welcome you to this National Minority Health Research Summit on Eliminating Racial and Ethnic Health Disparities. I do this on behalf of the NIH Office of Disease Prevention, which is a component of the NIH Director's Office. And it was only several months ago that I first met Stephen Thomas. I invited Stephen to deliver an inaugural seminar in a new series of public health seminars at the NIH. And in September, when Stephen came, there was an overflow crowd, and he spoke movingly for 45 minutes on the topic of eliminating health disparities and overcoming the burdens of race and history. The immediate response to that talk was striking. The discussion and dialogue with the NIH audience after the talk continued for nearly 2 hours. One of the lessons that day for me was the need to try to harness the enthusiasm of people exposed to a message like Stephen's. It seems that when people truly become aware of these basic inequities, the interest and desire to correct the problem surfaces in many. But they want to know, how should we go about it? And they want to know, what can I do? Well, some of the goals of this conference, perhaps, are to discuss and to craft and to spell out, if possible, answers to such questions. Phil Hellen also accompanied Stephen to NIH that day, and he discussed the concept of public and private collaborations, highlighting the example of the partnership between the Maurice Falk Foundation and the University of Pittsburgh. That spirit of collaboration is certainly one very helpful and necessary component of the solution. In addition, of course, we need ongoing leadership on this issue from key individuals, as exemplified by people like Art Levine, your dean, by Dr. Rosenkrantz, by Bill Coyne in the U.S. Congress, by Mr. Udine and Ms. McDonald on the Pittsburgh City Council, by David Satcher, the U.S. Surgeon General, and Dr. Ruth Kirstein, the Acting Director of the NIH, who about 13 months ago put dealing with health disparities on a fast track at NIH. Through their concern and their vision, these leaders have laid a foundation that makes it possible to meet like this and actually believe that progress will ensue. Through a series of circumstances, it seems that we have an uncommon opportunity over the next 5 to 10 years to actually solve this problem. The knowledge and resources are there, as is the goodwill of many. There may be opposition, and there definitely will be hurdles to overcome, but I think that these are present in any project destined for success. In my opinion, the most important thing we can do is to tap the wisdom and the expertise and the energy of people like yourselves to take optimal advantage of all these favorable circumstances. And I believe that will happen. As Robert Kennedy said in South Africa 35 years ago, few will have the greatness to bend history itself. But each of us can work to change a small portion of events, and in the total of all those acts will be written the history of this generation. So let it be said in 2005 or 2007 or 2010, when real progress in reducing health disparities has been documented in this city, in this state, and across the nation, that some of the seeds of that success were planted here in Pittsburgh, and that we were a part of it. Thank you. Again, I'm honored to have been asked to open this conference, and I certainly want to acknowledge all the wonderful hospitality that Stephen and his colleagues have extended to me and to all of the out-of-town guests here today. I think it's particularly appropriate and nice that we meet just in advance of the Martin Luther King holiday that celebrates the life of the man who inspires so many of us. And I think that the NIH now has renewed vigor in the approach to dealing with issues of health disparities, and that's the topic of my discussion this morning. I'll go to the next slide, Andrew. Great. You may ask, why is the NIH suddenly interested in this topic? And the fact is that the interest isn't particularly sudden. The NIH has, for years, for all the years of its existence, essentially, supported research on health disparities. It's not possible to study specific diseases like sickle cell disease, prostate cancer, HIV and AIDS, diabetes in the Pima Indian population. You can't study those specific disorders without concurrently studying the facts of health disparities. There are other programs, such as the Science and Ecology of Early Development, that studies the relationship of poverty to factors affecting child development. That's a program that the NIH has been supporting even prior to this recent renewed interest. There's the MARC program of Minority Access to Research Careers, which has been in existence for some time, funded by the NIH. The Jackson Heart Study is another more recent example of a clinical study focused on a health disparity, cardiovascular disease among African Americans. So the interest isn't particularly sudden, but I think more accurately we can consider it as a renewed emphasis. And, of course, the factors that have contributed to that include the president's leadership, David Satcher's leadership, and really at the NIH, Ruth Kirstein, who became the acting director in December of 1999, and who very quickly elevated this to a fast-track item at the agency. And of this, all of this culminated in the recent elevation of the NIH Office of Minority Health to a National Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities. And I think I'm going to, before discussing the strategic plan, outline a little bit of the background and what's going to be happening with the new National Center based on recent discussions I've had with the leadership of that office. We can go to the next slide. And this is one of those one-by-one items, so if you could click again. The Office of Research on Minority Health was an existing office in the Office of the Director that had been created in 1990. And Dr. John Ruffin has been the only director of that office. And that office has had numerous activities relevant to health disparities over the past 10 years. They've recently celebrated their 10th anniversary, and I think what's happened through the collection of factors that we have discussed just now, there's been enormous interest in enhancing their role even further, and that was the impetus for rolling this office into a new center. So let's just go down, and I'd like to discuss a little bit about what the office has been doing, and in, by comparison, what the new center will do. The office currently has 10 full-time employees, and that includes Dr. Ruffin and his deputy and the entire staff, 10 individuals, and they've been working like that for about 10 years. Go ahead, Andrew. Their budget for the most recent fiscal year has been $97 million, and that money has been spent in the following ways. Go ahead. The office forms partnerships with NIH institutes and centers to fund specific programs, and many of you in this room may be the beneficiaries of some of those programs. The office has not funded grants directly or independently. They have worked in collaboration with the institutes who actually review the grants, issue the RFAs, and fund the projects in collaboration with the Office of Research and Minority Health. And there are several ways in which that's done. Sometimes the office will fund all of the project. Other times the office will fund a portion of it, and they'll divvy up the amount of money that that is awarded. Other roles that the office has in terms of supporting research has been to provide stopgap funds on an annual basis for particular projects or community endeavors that that they feel warrant that support. Next. They also have trans-agency initiatives. They work, for instance, with CDC and with ARC to fund projects that that are of interest to their mission. Next. They also fund some outreach activities. Next. And they're governed by an advisory committee of 12 members. So this has been what the Office of Research and Minority Health has been doing, and now I'm going to show you, by comparison, what the new center will mean for this. Go ahead. Well, as you know, the legislation was signed into law just before Thanksgiving. Next. They estimate that there'll be double to triple the number of staff based on the needs of a center. Next. And some of those needs are reflected in the increased budget that they'll receive. This is for the upcoming year, $130 million. Next. They will have the ability to award grants independently on their own, which, of course, has enormous responsibility, but it also gives a level of independence that the office did not previously have. Next. The legislation that created this new center also requires them to bestow endowments throughout the country, in particular institutions where there has not been adequate support for research over the years. That's a component of the plan, and they're required to do that. Next. The bill also requires that they devote funds to form centers of excellence in minority health research. Next. The legislation also requires the new center to institute a loan repayment program, which has been highly successful in other areas, to attract researchers to devote their energy and work to health disparities in return for repayment of student loans. Next. And in contrast to the advisory committee held in the office, this new center will have a council, a formal scientific council, which will guide their activities and which will also help them to review grants and review all scientific activities within the new center. And that will be increased in number to 18 individuals. Next. This slide shows you a bit about the organizational framework. And this is available or will be shortly on the website for this new center. But essentially, it remains a component of the NIH Director's Office. It'll have its own advisory council. It'll also be guided by a trans-NIH Health Disparities Research Coordinating Committee, in which the 25 or so institutes and centers across NIH send members to meet and to discuss and to help the new center get its footing. In the office of the NCMHD director itself will be several sub-offices, and those are listed here: finance and administration, extramural activities, communications and public liaison, and research training and capacity building. And that latter category has to do with the, essentially with the endowments program that I mentioned. There'll be a division of research, also a division of community-based research and outreach, and finally a division of scientific planning and policy analysis, which will include scientific and strategic planning and program analysis and data management. Next slide. Now, they have a few immediate plans that I'll review on this slide. As you can imagine, they've just been signed into law. In fact, John Ruffin was just sworn in on Tuesday of this week on the NIH campus. And he is, as I mentioned, has been the director of the Office of Research on Minority Health for 10 years. He's a wonderful gentleman and a wonderful leader, and we are extremely excited and pleased that he is has been named the director formally of the new center. They will continue many of the existing partnerships that they have been utilizing through the office mechanism, and that includes co-funding grants and projects with the various institutes. Now, the fast-track items that they've cited really all come directly out of the legislation. They're anxious to get going on these because the bill has bill requires them to do those, and these include the Loan Repayment Program, the Centers of Excellence Program, and the Endowments Program. Next. Some RFAs are actually expected this quarter, which is the second quarter of the year. So they've got a lot that's going on. They're actually physically moving as well. But I think it's a very energetic group, and they're going to be hitting the ground running. Next. They also have the responsibility to complete the Trans-NIH 5-year strategic plan to reduce and ultimately eliminate health disparities. And I'm now going to talk about that plan in some detail, but it bears mentioning that the new center will have the ultimate responsibility for correlating all the varied components of that plan and presenting it to Dr. Kirstein for her signature. And they're required to do that by the end of this year. Now, the Trans-NIH strategic plan in draft form is available on the Internet, and it's open for public comment until the end of this month. It's been available on the Internet since early October of 2000, and there's still an opportunity and to comment. Perhaps all of you, many of you, already have. There's been an enormous response from the outside, I'm told. And one of the other things the center needs to do, of course, is to collate all of those comments, incorporate them. Everyone who enters a comment, evidently, to this on the strategic plan will have their, if desired, I guess, will have their name listed in a posting at some point of everyone who has made a comment or a suggestion regarding the Trans-NIH strategic plan. So let me move on to a discussion of the plan in detail, and mention that, of course, the President's radio address in February of 98, cited by many people, obviously the bully pulpit of the presidency has been critical in renewing interest in this long problem. The DHHS initiative that he laid out focuses on the 6 areas: infant mortality, cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, HIV, AIDS, and immunizations. And I think another less commonly cited impetus to renewed interest in health disparities and in the creation of the new center at NIH was the IOM report in 1999 discussing the unequal burden of cancer and assessment of NIH research and programs for ethnic minorities. Next. So what happened when Ruth Kirstein took over as acting director when Harold Varmus left the NIH in December of 1999 was to reconstitute the working group on health disparities. And that was in January of 2000. And Ruth actually requested that the directors of the 25 institutes and centers themselves, the highest, the most senior level leadership in NIH take a role in this initiative. And they met on a regular basis for months and devised a plan to create a trans-NIH strategic plan. The committee was co-chaired by Tony Fauci, who is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and as you all know, the world's foremost authority in HIV/AIDS. And also Dr. Yvonne Maddox, who was the deputy director of the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, but who became the deputy director of the entire NIH at Ruth Kirstein's request when Ruth became the acting. And Yvonne Maddox has just done, in addition to with Ruth Kirstein and Anthony Fauci, has just provided superb leadership on this issue and have very quickly formulated the NIH plan. The members, as I mentioned, have been the center institute and center directors, and as I also alluded to, that this whole plan is coordinated through Dr. Ruffin and previously through the Office of Research and Minority Health Advisory Committee, which was now, of course, the new center. Next slide. There are actually a total of 28 individual institute and center and office strategic plans. Each of these entities within the NIH, and so the NIH is sort of a loose federation of many states, and oftentimes they function independently, but they also can work in a team fashion as well. But the original way in which this was approached was for all of the individual institutes and centers and offices, in some instances, to create their own strategic plan within their own ballywick of activities. What could they all do to address this issue? And what then happened was, of course, input from advocacy groups and professional societies in each of the individual plans. And then all of the individual plans were reviewed by the Trans-NIH Working Group this past spring. A draft of a trans-NIH version was then put together, and this was an enormous task which took a lot of time during the summer, in which all the individual plans were not really added together, but were synthesized to create a trans-NIH document, and that's the one that's on the web. Also, the individual, it'll be of interest to many, I believe, as well, to look at the individual strategic plans, and most of those are also available right now on the Internet through either the individual institutes' web pages, and there's also a single site that lists the strategic plans for all the individual institutes and centers. And as I mentioned, the Trans-NIH plan continues to be posted on the website for public comment until the end of this month. Originally it was to end in December. It's been extended to January. I don't know if it'll be extended again. So if you do have comments about it, please, if convenient, try to look at it within this time frame. Next slide. Now, the definition that NIH has applied to health disparities is shown here. Differences in the incidence, prevalence, mortality, and burden of diseases and other adverse health conditions that exist among specific populations in the United States, including differences related to socioeconomic status. Next slide. The focus in the plan has been on the health status, including SES factors, of specific racial and ethnic minority populations, as listed here, African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans, Asian and Pacific Islanders, and Alaska Natives. Next. The plan of action includes a five-year time frame so that this is not a sort of a one-time attempt to attack this issue. It's recognized that it's a long-term problem. It requires long-term planning. It involves expanded research training and employment opportunities for people, particularly who are likely to have a major interest in these issues. It has a component that defines codes and allows the NIH to track and analyze progress along these lines. It'll also strengthen existing partnerships and develop new ones with the outside sector, and one of the goals also is to increase public awareness. Now, all of these plans are synthesized together in three big areas. Next. And those are, number one, research, number two, research infrastructure, and number three, public information and community outreach. Next. In terms of research, there are four sub-areas that all the institutes will be focused on. Advancing the understanding of diseases that contribute to health disparities. Improving detection of such diseases. Enhancing prevention of those diseases. And improving treatment for those conditions. Next. In terms of advancing understanding, some of the areas in which the plan will be addressing these problems include epidemiology and risk factors, the environment and socioeconomic status, the mechanisms of disease, and also genetic variation. Next slide. This is a slide prepared by John Kerner of the National Cancer Institute, which I think helps to present the approach that the NCI and all of the NIH institutes are taking to their strategic plans in this area. It's not simply a research basic science bench approach. There's recognition that there's a huge number of relevant factors that contribute to the situation. And I think this slide, although quite full, summarizes things beautifully. It includes description of the social factors like income disparity and racial segregation and social cohesion. It includes items like cultural factors and institutional factors of racism and the like. Healthcare provider factors, the number of minority healthcare providers, for instance. Individual factors, individual biological factors, environmental exposures, individual risk factors, individual illness, monitoring behaviors. All of these factors, of course, come together to impact the quality of life and disease mortality dealing in relationship to conditions in which we know health disparities exist. Next slide. In terms of research infrastructure, there's a desire within the plan to further support research training and career development. As I mentioned in the beginning, the NIH has been doing a lot of that over the years, but the strategic plan calls for that activity to be enhanced. We also have a component of the plan that will provide institutional resources, and in many institutions, that's a large hurdle. In order to do research, you need better infrastructure. You need to sort of kick the ball going. And the NIH has been doing that in recent years and will continue to do that and to do more of that for institutions that have the capacity, the intellectual capacity to conduct the research, but need the funds to sort of build the labs to get the programs established. Next slide. Here are some other examples of how you can develop infrastructure, and these are all mentioned within the NIH strategic plan. Better clinical research training. The Meyerhoff Scholars Program is a program out of the University of Maryland in Baltimore associated with the NIH, just as an example, in which funds are provided for promising students to enter careers in biomedical research. The Minority Access to Research Careers Program will be expanded. There are programs in neurosciences as well as in human genetics that are relatively new and which will be further bolstered. In terms of institutional resources, there'll be communications and network technology support. There'll be support for genetic technology. For instance, there's a molecular genetics initiative at Howard University in the District of Columbia that's recently been established. Further enhancement of institutional development award program for specific universities. And better minority representation in peer review panels. These are all goals that are components of the plan. Next. The third major area has to do with public information and community outreach. And the need here is to develop research-based information resources to communicate, to have better communication regarding public awareness of what the NIH is doing, and also information about health disparities, about the diseases themselves, about the behaviors and the preventative aspects of disease. And also transferring knowledge to healthcare providers. This is a critical element in all of research, translating what we learn through research at the community and at the bench level to the community, to the healthcare providers who can actually deal with the patients and hopefully directly affect the rates of disease. Next. Several examples of public information and community outreach are listed here. And these include two initiatives from my own Office of Disease Prevention, the database on population-based prevention research. What we've done is the staff has reviewed all of the NIH grants portfolio in recent years in an effort to discern how many of those biomedical research grants actually deal with population-based prevention research. And it turns out there's nearly 5,000 of them in fiscal year 1999 alone. Well, we think that would be useful information for the public health community, for the biomedical research community, and we're going to collate all of those programs and put it on a searchable registry on our webpage in the very near future. We've also established a Baltimore-Washington Public Health Consortium to allow us to interact more closely with schools of public health in the greater D.C. area, and these include the University of Maryland, the Johns Hopkins University, the Uniformed Health Sciences University in Bethesda, Howard University in the district, George Washington University in the district, and Georgetown University in the district. This consortium meets on a quarterly basis. There's a steering committee that guides its activities. We learn a lot more about what's going on among each of these institutions and academic centers. We also look at it as an opportunity to examine closely the health disparities in the Baltimore-Washington corridor, which are as abundant there as they are in Pittsburgh and other urban areas of the United States. Next slide. Oh, I'm sorry. Stay there for a second. We have a couple of other items here. The Asian and Pacific Islander project, I want to mention, that is a program that focuses on cardiovascular health and which aims to enhance awareness of proper behaviors to reduce cardiovascular disease in high-risk populations. And there are also public policy, public information programs that will enhance physician participation in the cancer clinical trials as well as minority recruitment in those. And finally, there's a renewed emphasis on behavioral and social sciences communications. As many of you know, there is a formal office, just like the Office of Disease Prevention and the Office of Minority Research Health at the NIH within the director's office, and that's led by Raynard Kington, most recently of the NCHS. So that office has been active and will continue to be active in supporting activities and enhancing communications on issues relevant to disparities that impact behaviors. Next slide. So in summary, the NIH has developed an integrated strategic plan on health disparities. It's been an open process with substantial public input, which is still continuing. Response to the comments and the final review will be through the new Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities. Final approval of the NIH strategic plan on health disparities will be by Dr. Ruth Kirstein. And these plans and programs will be part of the fiscal year 2002 budget request for the NIH. Next slide. I wanted to also mention some other federal initiatives that are complementary to the NIH effort. As I mentioned in my introductory comments, it's an unusual time. We've got sort of a coalition of interest and energy from a variety of sources. Examples of those are the CDC Prevention Research Centers. There's a handful of those. There's about 25 in total, I understand, but these four are specifically geared to minority health issues and dealing with health disparities. Also wanted to mention the EXCEED program from the Agency for Healthcare Research Quality. Dr. Ritchie, of course, has one of those Exceed grants right here at the University of Pittsburgh. These are wonderful programs that have been recently developed and awarded. That program is going to continue and to develop further excellence centers to eliminate ethnic and racial disparities. ARC is an agency that deals with healthcare access a lot at the community level, and I wanted to sort of just close with a reminder that in addition to the federal agencies, we also have the hope that perhaps the Congress will recognize an opportunity to join sort of this bandwagon. Of course, the Congress has created all of this anyway, but in terms of access and reflecting on a comment that Art Levine made at the very beginning of this morning on the number of uninsured Americans, there are literally 45 million Americans who lack basic health insurance, and you can't get health care in this country if you don't have health insurance, essentially. You can't get good preventative health care. And when you speak to people, when you listen to people who don't have health insurance, you hear a very pervasive sense of injustice. And the vast majority of people who are uninsured in the country actually have jobs. They're the working uninsured. And this is an issue that's been estimated that if we could devote 15% of the federal budget surplus over the next decade, you could actually deal with this problem. So I think that's worth citing in the context of a meeting on health disparities. So I think I'll end there, and thank you very much for your attention. I'll be pleased to answer any questions about the NIH plan. Thank you.